KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Calling all denizens of Earth. Tune in to KABU on Saturday, April 22nd from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. for KABU's Earth Day Takeover. It's a whole day of radio programming devoted to climate action and environmental justice. Join us and prepare for nature sounds, music, and activist interviews focused on our shared climate future. That's KABU's Earth Day Takeover on Saturday, April 22nd from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. and online at kabu.fm/earthday.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. We would just first like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. So be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And now on to the main story of the episode. In the latest chapter of Starbucks versus their workers, National Labor Relations Board, or the NLRB, a judge for the NLRB, has ruled that the company committed, quote, egregious and widespread violations of federal labor law after it was determined that they fired seven workers at stores in upstate New York around the Buffalo area in retaliation for their involvement with union organizing. You may remember from last year that Buffalo was actually the flashpoint for all of the union organizing. The first store was the first Starbucks store was actually unionized in Buffalo, and from there it caught like wildfire around the city, and they were really sort of the hotbed of organizing before it spread around the rest of the country. And so naturally the company took took some retaliation towards that specific area and those workers. So this ruling is actually a consolidation of 35 unfair labor practice complaints filed against the company by those Starbucks workers, as well as the Starbucks Workers United Union, or the SBWU. Now, the judge has ordered the company to rehire all seven of the illegally terminated workers and to reopen a unionized store that had been shuttered in response to the workers' decision to join that union.
And I think it's important to call out here, too, that this really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, especially if you listen to the episode where we kind of started this off, whereas, Howard Schultz, the very famous founder of Starbucks, came back as the CEO and basically in his announcement stated that this was his objective the entire time, and in a very bold, somewhat illegal statement around, basically saying he was going to take control of the unionization efforts like inside of Starbucks. So this stuff is not a surprise to anyone at all who's been paying attention.
Yeah, he definitely like broadcast what his intentions were when he came back. They brought him back in basically to specifically shut down the union.
Yes.
And I think you're right. Like, I think it actually happened. The timing of it was he stepped back in as like interim CEO kind of right after that first store in Buffalo actually mm-hmm. voted to join the union. And so it really is a, you know, his presence back in the company as CEO is a direct response to the worker activism that we're now, you know, seeing the back end of, you know, what the legal ruling on that whole situation is. So it's, you know, that is basically his entire existence at that company is just shutting down worker organizing. But it is great to see that there is actually finally some sort of comeuppance for that, at least in a legal, you know, sense. Because yeah, like this judge, he wrote 200 plus pages, you know, in his decision that he handed down. The judge, whose name is Michael Roses, he wrote basically that Starbucks had shown, quote, a general disregard for the employees' fundamental rights, end quote. And, you know, that is in response to their response to the union campaigns. And so the judge went on to explain that, you know, along with the illegal firings, the company also violated federal labor laws hundreds of times by interrogating and threatening workers about organizing activity and by restricting discussions of pay while those workers were on the job.
Mm-hmm. And another tactic they've used is they've basically repeatedly sent high-ranking staff into stores to kind of closely supervise and monitor workers in order to intimidate them and kind of create impressions that union activities were kind of under surveillance.
Yeah. I mean, that is like, these are pretty classic. You know, we've definitely discussed these types of tactics before on the show, but it is pretty cut and dry, like union busting, anti-union activities that also happen to be incredibly illegal in terms of a federal labor law standpoint. So it's no surprise that these, you know, there were 35 plus complaints that got rolled into this decision here. Now, you know, Starbucks, of course, argues that their actions were not illegal and that the workers were fired for common issues such as poor performance, tardiness, or you know, breaking company policies. In fact, actually, yeah, just recently an organizer in Buffalo who was the main organizer at a store that recently unionized was immediately terminated for, you know, tardiness, but then it was very quickly proven that actually she didn't have more than one tardy instance on her record. And so that was pretty quickly rebutted. But, you know, it's no surprise that they would point to things that are within their policy for firing as opposed to their retaliation efforts. But, you know, so many labor activists and journalists believe it's not a coincidence, but instead part of a recognizable corporate pattern of firing pro-union workers who've led organizing drives at their stores. It is a pretty clear pattern that does seem to be playing out not only in the Buffalo area, but in their retaliation towards workers around the country, certainly. Mm-hmm.
And the SBWU has identified more than 200 workers at Starbucks stores involved in unionization who have been fired basically because of those organizing activities.
Yeah. So like it is, as you know, the journalists and the activists have pointed out, like it is an identifiable pattern that Starbucks has been using.
Yes. Like, and, you know, and obviously we don't know all of Starbucks HR policies, right? But
right.
Turnover is actually something that costs a company money. So mm-hmm. typically in, you know, kind of short term, you know, tardiness, things like this, you get put on a PIP, like an improvement plan or something like this before immediately firing too. So I think it's pretty easy to kind of connect the dots on what's going on here, just because otherwise the business would not really be acting in its own best interest, right? With causing all this turnover and kind of random removal.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine having a company as massive as Starbucks with, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of workers around the country, and each one of those workers gets fired if they're late once? You know, that there's no way that a company could possibly operate with, you know, holding every single worker to that high standard and not just have complete breakdown in their stores. So
And I think obviously, you know, Howard coming back, he's going to be using every trick in the book. I feel like the only thing we haven't covered so far is typically there's some sort of like, you know, theft or thievery, like, oh, you know, we're losing so much stock in this store. Obviously that's more of a grocery and kind of commercial good or consumer good tactic, but you know, we're seeing them pull out all the stops.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, even here in Portland, recently Walmart shut down, you know, all of their locations, which is just two locations. But, you know, a lot of the narrative around it was, oh, well, we're shutting this down because of all the theft. But the reality is that it was actually part of a larger, longer-term pattern of, you know, the stores just sort of not doing as well and then being contracted around the, you know, not only in the Portland area, but around the country. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes this type of thing is put forward of like, oh, well, we're the hot button issue at the moment. We're just going to blame that rather than what the actual decision is that like, hey, we're losing money on this end or that. And this is a larger corporate decision we're making to shutter stores. But yeah, I mean, so it is no surprise that they would highlight something that, you know, could be found within their manual versus just straight up anti-organizing efforts is why they would shut down or, you know, fire some of these workers. But yeah, last year, more than 7,000 workers at nearly 300 of the stores across the U.S., the Starbucks stores across the U.S., voted to unionize despite strong opposition from those corporate bosses that we were just talking about.
Yeah, and for just a little bit of context, Starbucks has 9,000 stores in the U.S., company-owned.
Yeah, which is, you know, massive. And if you're, you know, saying 300 of those stores, not great at math, but, you know, that is not a huge percentage of it. And so you would think that that wouldn't be something that would, you know, basically roil the entire company and bring a CEO out of retirement just to shut that down. But, you know, it is something that could catch like wildfire. And so the company clearly saw that as a threat and had to shut it down by any means necessary, it seems. And yeah, so, you know, according to a complaint filed by the NLRB in March, Starbucks once again violated federal labor law when it excluded those unionized stores from a new policy that facilitated tipping via credit cards, which, you know, if you've been into any coffee shop or any store recently, is pretty much the only way that tipping happens anymore is, you know, you pay on the little pad with your credit card and then you select the tipping amount. So to exclude, you know, stores that have unionized or have discussed unionization from receiving credit card tipping is basically just cutting them out from tipping altogether, basically. Yeah.
And it really, I think the most blatant part of this is not even trying to attempt to hide it, right? Including some stores that aren't unionizing and things like this. but there's really just, I mean, I think Howard's done this the whole time he's come back to Starbucks, is really just not even trying to hide it or couch it or do anything like this. It's just clearly blatant attempts to punish stores that are attempting to organize.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, you're very right. He's just not even, he's saying the quiet part loud for sure. And that is kind of his MO, it seems, at this point. Which, you know, is unsurprising for a, you know, billionaire corporate boss who made his money. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, well, and you know, I think for things, right, the NLRB doesn't, right, like there is a battle, is not the right word. You know, there is a, there is, you know, a push and a pull and a negotiation period between organized labor and the businesses in which they work for, right? And there are things that, you know, employers are allowed to do, and there are things that they aren't, right? So, you know, if Howard was engaging in some of the things that are legally allowed to do and doing it in a blatant manner, that's not what we would be calling out. We're calling these out because they are strictly illegal, right? Like from the federal government, the NLRB is going to see them. And so you would imagine if you were going to, you know, take part in some of these activities, you would take some sort of effort to at least not make it as blatant as it is.
Yeah, like, yeah, you would think you'd have some tact to it and recognize, like, well, I am I'm a major public figure and this is a major public company. Like, therefore, I'm going to do something that maybe doesn't attract the immediate attention of the legal authorities as well as the media and then the public at large. Mm-hmm. But I guess, I mean, you know, if you think about, like, where he is coming from in terms of founding the company, you know, I don't know the exact time frame, but I imagine Starbucks was founded sometimes in the late 80s or early 90s, you know, and he's the CEO of it for, you know, 20 years beyond that. It's an area, it's a time where, like, he probably didn't have much scrutiny over how he treated his workers or how he chose to deal with, you know, unionization and stuff like that. So it's probably one of those things where he came up in a moment where no one really cared about how he was, you know, trying to bust unions. And now there's a lot of actual attention and energy in that sector, you know, for union and union activity and for unionization around the economy. And people are paying attention and the NLRB has some more teeth. And so all of a sudden his old tactics, his old little tricks are being recognized and called out now, which is definitely a positive step. But yeah, as you said, if he were just acting in good faith and trying to represent the best interests of the corporation in relation to, you know, negotiating with the unions and to relating to their workers, that would be one thing, and we would not be calling that out. But he is blatantly breaking federal labor law, and therefore it has to be called out. It has to be highlighted.
Yeah, and I think it also is, I mean, obviously it's in the past now, but I think it is important to call out and remember, because we've talked about it on the show, that Howard Schultz was also, if Hillary had won in 2016, she had planned to announce him for the Department of Labor. And, you know, and previously up until this point, he actually had a pretty good track record with labor. So really, this is a pretty big right turn for him, kind of personally and professionally, right? Because I think as Starbucks came up, it was really viewed as a bastion of, hey, you know, we were giving insurance and all these things to employees and things like that. So this really, the whole story is kind of a sharp right turn for Starbucks and Howard himself.
That's a great point, because yeah, like, I mean, it's hard to remember now just because we've been covering this side of the issue for so long, but you know, in an earlier time period, Starbucks is actually viewed as sort of like a progressive, forward-thinking company. It's from the Northwest. You know, it serves coffee. It created coffee shops in a way that, you know, in a moment where like no one was hanging out in these bohemian settings, and Starbucks really kind of created that culture and that environment. And so, yeah, it did have, it was sort of, you know, draped in this progressive, you know, public image that has really been, you know, pulled away. The curtain's been pulled back, it seems. And you know, maybe whether or not this is in fact how he has operated his entire career, it is very clear that this is what he, you know, as a CEO and founder, this is how he feels about his workers now. And so, yeah, it is, as you said, it's a very hard right turn that the company has taken in the public eye. And you know, in May of 2022, you know, the then CEO Howard Schultz, he has stepped down in the last few weeks, but then the CEO Howard Schultz announced that the company would begin rolling out credit card tipping at all of its locations except for the roughly 270 stores that were unionized or in the process of unionizing. And you know, the ability to collect tips from customers that paid with their credit cards, you know, had been a core demand presented by the Starbucks Workers United Union. And so for them to basically, the company to roll out this program that, you know, should be available to all workers who are doing the work and getting paid, you know, most customers are paying with credit cards, to not only to deny that from the workers, but also to have that be one of the main things that the union is asking for, and then to deny that from them is pretty clearly, you know, a retaliatory effort on the part of the corporation. And you know, once the tipping program, the credit card tipping program, actually went into effect, the union filed charges with the NLRB alleging that this exclusion constituted, you know, blatant union busting. And now the labor board has backed their claim, demanding that management both turn on credit card tipping at unionized stores and also make thousands of workers whole again for the additional wages that they would likely have received through that tipping program.
According to a joint investigation by the SBWU and A More Perfect Union, credit card tipping has added an extra $3 to $4 an hour onto workers' paychecks at stores where it's been turned on. So this is a pretty sizable retaliatory strike, right? This is affecting the bottom line of all workers at Starbucks at those stores.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will continue covering this in just a moment. But if you are just tuning in to the show here, this is Labor Radio, and we have been and will continue to be discussing the NLRB bringing charges against Starbucks for blatant union busting on multiple different, you know, fronts over the last year or so. So yeah, thank you so much for joining Labor Radio, and we're going to continue our discussion now. So yeah, the Labor Radio, or sorry, the that was a brain fart there, but the NLRB's complaint also said that the company illegally showed preference to non-unionized workers by granting them larger pay increases in December of last year. And at that time, Starbucks laid out a convoluted tiered wage increase system that either granted unionized workers far smaller raises than their non-union counterparts, or simply excluded those workers altogether from the raise program.
Yeah, and basically this type of tactic, right, denying unionized workers pay and benefit increases, has kind of obviously has been a primary tactic by Starbucks management, whether that is through actual HR policies or it's through technology, like you mentioned with the tipping software not being rolled out to specific stores.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it has been pretty successful for them too. Like when the policy went into effect last September, 230 stores had unionized in less than a year. And since that point, you know, since that unprecedented rate of unionization, you know, took hold of Starbucks, once they rolled out this new program and the new tiered, you know, wage system, that unprecedented rate of unionization has dramatically slowed. In fact, actually, a worker, Alicia Humphrey, at a Starbucks store in Oklahoma City, explained that at my store, it did have a negative impact. We had our election finalized right as they rolled out these new benefits, so we were told that since we won our election, we were not getting credit card tipping or the raises. Our manager met with everyone and told us that if we transferred to another store, you would make $1.50 more per hour and get credit card tipping. And some people did take that offer and transfer.
Again, I think, you know, reading that quote out loud, it's sometimes can be hard to communicate how actually crazy that is, right? Because if management is telling them that these things are specifically being done because of the organizing organizing efforts, it's just so blatantly like breaking the law that the NLRB is really not going to have that hard of a time putting together a case against Starbucks, right? And now that the Biden administration is in charge, right, a lot of these things like the NLRB are kind of set up by you know, the president and different organizations like the executive branch, right? And so they can have, you know, in some administrations, they can have a lot of teeth, and in others, they have less. And, you know, you can say many things about what Biden has done union-wise, but this NLRB is ready to go after stuff like this. And Starbucks is making it incredibly easy to do so.
Yeah, they made themselves a very juicy target, it seems. Which, you know, I guess, as you're saying, in years past, they just maybe wouldn't have – we would never have seen the kind of actual pushback that they're seeing now. And so – someone like Howard Schultz probably just wasn't prepared for the amount of actual attention and energy put towards his company and then the workers, you know, who were trying to organize there. Now, you know, in an effort to reinvigorate the organizing campaign that certainly did slow as a result of that, you know, that shift in the company policy, the SBWU encouraged unionized stores around the country to hold a National Day of Action this month on April 13th, which came just 3 weeks after Starbucks' new CEO took over the top job from founder Howard Schultz. Now, that Day of Action, which included rallies and some walkouts, came hot on the heels of Schultz's combative testimony at a packed congressional hearing on March 29th.
Yeah, and so Schultz, who was compelled to testify under threat of subpoena, was called to respond to widespread allegations of union busting and worker intimidation, which we've, you know, obviously covered today.
Yeah, and despite his insistence that Starbucks, you know, unequivocally has not broken the law, the NLRB has found that the company violated federal labor laws roughly 1,300 times under his watch, which is staggering.
And it's important to know, too, I think a lot of these laws around kind of labor busting or union busting and things like this, a lot of them are intent driven. And so I think the reason why we've called out so specifically that they've made some really interesting statements is, even if you were going to do a lot of the labor busting tactics or union busting, excuse me, tactics, is you wouldn't state why, right? You would kind of have to be more tactful in order to avoid that. And so a lot of this stuff is going to be easy to prove because there is record and witness of, hey, there is a kind of response to this behavior in the response from Starbucks, right? Which is, I think, why we're so confused by some of the actions of management.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, earlier in the show, like Howard Schultz telegraphed his move when he came back as CEO. He basically said he is coming back to squash the organizing effort. He did not even try to hide that fact. So it should be no surprise to anyone that this is the response. This is the reaction to it. So Schultz, he was summoned to testify in front of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, which just so happens to be It just so happens to be chaired by Senator Bernie Sanders. Ahead of his testimony, the committee released a report pointing to dozens of NLRB complaints against Starbucks. And, you know, with such a labor champion as Sanders at the head of the committee, Starbucks workers were also sitting in the audience. Senate Democrats, you know, were rightly treating Schultz, who is, as we discussed, a longtime mega donor for the Democratic Party, as well as a 2020 presidential campaign or primary campaign candidate. You know, a lot of the Democrats who were on the panel were actually treating him as the corporate criminal that he's proven himself to be, which is, you know, somewhat shocking, honestly. And it's important and, you know, frankly unexpected that these excoriations came from all the Democrats present and not just from, you know, Bernie Sanders. If it was just Bernie sitting there, you know, calling out, you know, the corporate billionaire, but, you know, not any of the other Democrats, that would be kind of a normal day in Washington. But the fact that Schultz actually got, you know, reamed out by all the Democrats on the panel is impressive. And, you know, included in that group was actually the senator most closely linked to himself, Senator Patty Murray from the state of Washington, who has received, you know, millions in campaign contributions from him over the years and has been a staunch supporter of hers. But, you know, she actually was there to speak out against him. And she, you know, she questioned Schultz about complaints from workers and said she was troubled and disappointed to hear the company's widespread company's widespread union busting efforts. So, you know, obviously, it's just a hearing. There's, you know, there's no real result from it, but, you know, the fact that he went in front of the Senate and Senate Democrats actually attacked him and called him out for some of these union busting efforts is a step in the right direction, honestly, and pretty, you know, pretty impressive for a Democratic Party that has not had a lot of teeth when it comes to supporting labor over the years. Despite some deep partisan divisions that exist in this country, Republicans and Democrats are almost always united in the fight that matters most to their donors, which is, you know, namely supporting capitalists and against workers. But Schultz's bad day on the Hill showed that labor power can change, can change that equation, and, you know, forcing parts of the government or of the governing class to turn against the bosses and make concessions to workers is something that can actually happen when you put pressure on them.
And I think it's important to note too that, I mean, he really didn't give them a choice. The ways in which his management team rolled out these retaliatory strikes, the way he was onboarded when he returned as CEO, I mean, he just made it impossible to do so, really. Yeah. You know, I think we've encountered other situations like Amazon or things like this where they've done it in a more tactful manner, or, you know, hired union busting law firms or agencies, right, who know how to go about this. Like, you know, I would love to give credit, but ultimately it seems like it was just bungled from the side of ownership and from the employer, right? They by stating the things the way they did, by coming out and kind of telling people it was retaliatory, like in meetings and things like this, they made it pretty much impossible. And so, you know, at the end of the hearing, essentially Democrats gave Schultz and his fellow Starbucks board members a homework assignment. Essentially, they asked them to bargain in good faith with the union and sign a first contract with at least one of the unionized stores within 2 weeks. You know, that board meeting was on March 29th, so obviously they've failed to do so in a timely manner.
Yeah, unfortunately, they did not turn that assignment in on time, it seems. But yeah, now, you know, it will certainly take more organizing to resist Schultz's backdoor efforts to coax, you know, these once defiant Senate Democrats back into the fold and receive donations from him and such. But this very public dressing down was a good start. And, you know, sometimes it is important to sit back and just enjoy the small victories. And this is certainly what one of those was. So, you know, obviously there will be more to this. And, you know, there is still organizing efforts happening at Starbucks stores around the country. So we will continue to cover this story as it moves forward. But unfortunately, we are running out of time here. So, you know, just to say that keep an eye on what happens with workers at these stores. And if there's a store near you where workers are going on strike or calling for customer boycotts, then certainly pay attention to that, because that, you know, things like customer boycotts may be the only thing that can really help these workers get the attention of management and bring them to the bargaining table. So, you know, again, just keep an eye on what the workers at your Starbucks, local Starbucks, are doing.
And it's important to know, even our strongest, most progressive stores can change, right? Like,
yes.
you're only as kind of good as your last actions, right, towards your workforce.
Yeah.
And so again, this is a story of a kind of a once really progressive company that has really changed its tone and tenor, and we don't know exactly why internally, profits or whatever it is, right? So, keep an eye on it all, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will certainly do that as well. We will be back with you next month. But thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. Have a great evening.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're talking with Michael Leibowitz. Michael, welcome to Prison Pipeline.